Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. Today, we're diving into the world of alternative payments. Over the years, we've seen this seismic shift that's been occurring in the banking industry, specifically around alternative payment methods. And overall, there's just so much choice out there in terms of how consumers can pay. My guests today, Matt Nealis, Senior Director of Global Products and Solutions at Euronet, and Brian Riley, Co-Head of Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research, will be sharing insights into the increasing frequency of contactless payments, e-commerce transactions, and peer-to-peer transfers, really underscoring the transformative impact they have on traditional banking structures. They're going to go through these unprecedented changes, underscoring the urgency for the banking industry to evolve and really embrace these new trends. They're also going to highlight just how banks can integrate alternative payment solutions seamlessly, efficiently, and securely. Matt and Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. The rise of alternative payments has been one of the most significant trends in the banking industry over the last few years. Matt, can you share with us your insights on why these alternative payment methods are becoming so popular?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really in control. And when I say we, it's the consumer. And we have all become far more digitally focused and connected than ever before. I know me, even as a more of an old school guy that doesn't lean on a lot of technology, I'm far more inclined to take an easier and faster path to payments when it comes to my interaction with commerce and business. So consumers have really kind of taken control. We are more concerned about convenience than ever. We're more concerned about security and speed than ever. And that has really bolstered the payment methods that have come around in the last couple of years. We've seen the rise in real-time payments around the world. It is a trend that is not going away anytime soon. We're all using digital wallets more than ever. And then certainly during the pandemic and afterwards, contactless payments have become the norm. And all of this is driving us to that desire of faster to use, more secure payments. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Here in the States, you know, my daughter is, even though she just got out of school a couple of weeks ago, she's already looking forward to next school year. So she's been doing a lot of research in that perfect backpack that she's going to take into the new school year. And we bought one on Converse's website yesterday. And as I was going to make that payment, it gave me a few options. I could either pay with my credit card or I could pay with Apple Pay. And I just selected Apple Pay. It was one click, had all my credit card information populated. It had the delivery method populated for me. And it was just that ease and convenience and that trust that I have in that digital wallet that I use that made that a no-brainer for me. And I was speaking to one of my colleagues a couple of weeks ago that lives in India, and that he and his family took a vacation to what they call a hill station. It's very warm over there this time of year, and they're going to the colder climate areas of the country. And these are very remote areas and not a lot of infrastructure built up. And he went to a small market, a vendor there, and made a purchase and went to pay in cash. And the vendor said, no, I actually prefer real-time payments in this scenario. It's more secure for that vendor. They're not carrying a lot of cash with them. So they made that transaction over the real-time payment network in India called UPI. And this is just becoming the norm around the world. You know, us as a global provider, we're starting to see these use cases really dominate. And that is what has led us to put a real significant concentration on these digital payment methods that are becoming just so increasingly more popular each and every year.
You know, something that's common in payments is not everything's a success, but when things take off, they skyrocket. Now, you look at something like contactless payments in the U.S., it's really arguably only about 5-6 years old. But the current numbers are that more than half the population have used them, and the preference goes for that. And I think what you said on the head, Matt, is a lot of it has to do with consumer preference. It's just not payment card companies pushing, this is what we have available. There's a voice resonating from the consumer side that says we want to do more of these innovative transaction types.
As more and more consumers embrace these alternative payment methods, Matt, what challenges do traditional banks face and how can they adapt to stay competitive?
So we're having these conversations every day. And, you know, really three things have risen to the top in our conversations. The first is banks are struggling because they have legacy solutions in place. And these are legacy solutions that can be tough to work with. And what I mean tough to work with is they're shut off to the outside world. It's hard for them to introduce new capabilities. It's hard for them to introduce new relationships with technology providers or partners that they might want to work with. So what we try to do is really help them bridge that gap between the legacy solution and whatever needs they are facing today, whether it's, you know, they want to introduce a new wallet to their customers or whatever it might be. That lack of bridge between legacy and the future is really starting to get in the way, and they're looking for ways to tackle that. The second is compliance. You know, compliance is first and foremost what we all need to concentrate on to protect our customers, to protect ourselves. And we have to make sure that these banks not only adhere to the compliance and regulatory needs of today, but as these new payment methods come on board and as they evolve and there are changes to these regulations, we have to stay abreast on those changes. And as a technology provider, we have to keep our solutions compliant and, more importantly, our clients compliant with the changing regulatory needs, whatever that network or payment channel might introduce. And then lastly, it's that balance of how quickly can I get to market with something, but also stay in control of my product offering so it doesn't become disjointed and it stays cohesive and it's a great experience for my customers. So what we like to help banks do is really pull together the right suite of products that they can introduce to their customers to not only create immediate value for their customer, but to also create a great experience for the customer. All of this needs to work together, and it's the matter of managing what offerings you put on the table versus those that you might stay away from because it's too complicated or it might be too slow to market and you've already missed that train, so to speak. So it's that balance of being quick and fast to meet the needs of the consumers, but also managing your product offering. And this is what we try to do with our solution called Ren, is to, one, bridge that gap between the legacy solution and the future and current needs of the bank, as well as keeping the solution in regulatory compliance, no matter where it might land in the world. And then lastly, managing that offering to make it cohesive and seamless for the customer as they interact with merchants or the bank itself.
And that compliance issue is a really big deal. You know, you look at some of the things that happened recently in P2P payments where consumers weren't really understanding that payments are irrevocable once they go through the process. And the regulations that protect consumers were not keeping pace with what was going on. So it caused many of the financial institutions to come up with their own rules on it. And then as regulators get closer to it, you want to have a voice there, and staying current on those topics are really important. So you end up with a myriad of different evolving payment plans or options, and being able to keep the pace of what's going on with changes is really essential.
That's right, Brian. And one of the things that we look forward to is, one, sharing those conversations with not only our peers in the industry, but also our customers. And you know, I'd be interested to hear some of your thoughts on, you know, what's the best way to stay up to speed on these changes? You know, we rely a lot on our product teams, our experts within our company to do the research and really get to know the compliance needs and regulatory needs. And the banks often, they don't have that team in place, and it's just left to one person or two people to do that. So what we try to do is bring, where we can, our experts together with our clients as well as our peers within the industry to tackle this together. Are you seeing that in the industry as well?
Yeah, one of the challenges there is that compliance is often reactive to what's going on instead of being proactive. And you really need to be out on the edge with that in front of what's going on so you could structure the interface properly and set the expectations right. You know, if you look at what's going on with mobile payments, it was brand new 3 years ago. Now it's old hat, right? Everybody does it. Same thing with a digital wallet. I did a forecast for a major firm last week on global payments, and between 2023 and 2030, they're moving from $5 trillion to $10 trillion, right? So once these things get hold, they really take a life of their own. It's like wallets too, right? Wallets have gone through a whole challenge from when they first came up. And the first part of it was who owns the customer, right? So everybody, you know, you have $8 trillion flowing in, a couple of basis points is a lot of money in this market, right? And so everybody wants a piece of it. And how does that divvy up? And in some ways, that's not a settled issue yet, right? But then you have Apple Wallet, and all of a sudden, you know, like the numbers I've seen are like 20% of people are putting their transactions through on that, right? So we go from zero to 100 miles an hour, really. Once you get out of that inflection point, then they hockey stick up aggressively.
So you're absolutely right, Brian. What we're seeing in the real-time payment space mirrors exactly that, that hockey stick effect. We have been involved in the real-time payment space for a number of years, and it's really chasing that. We see the value that's creating for populations around the world. And we know there is also an inherent struggle for financial institutions looking to get involved because it's a completely different message type than what they're using today. Most of the banks out there are very familiar with ISO 8583, and the real-time payment space is largely and now essentially exclusively in ISO 20022. And there's a disconnect that banks are running into around the world of translating their operations from one message type to another. And we found a real niche that we could jump into, you know, largely in Asia Pac and now certainly in the US with the rise of FedNow and what that might do to impact the TCH RTP network as well. We want to jump in. And we discovered that a few years ago, and we found a sweet spot to help financial institutions not only connect to these real-time payment networks, but to also have a ready-made suite of digital overlay services that they could then quickly bring into their solution and offer to their customers and jump on that hockey stick on the front end. Because no matter where you go, you rarely see a real-time payment network fail. If you look at Pix in Brazil or UPI in India, they have exploded. And not only have they exploded, but they have impacted the country and region around them. And you see countries wanting to jump in because of the immediate success that these other countries have seen that have introduced real-time payments. So I wholeheartedly agree with you that now is the time to act, especially here in the U.S. with a new network coming on board this summer, to jump in on one of these trends that you know is likely going to be successful and experience that hockey stick growth. And we're here to help you do that.
Yeah. And if you don't take advantage of those opportunities as they come up, right, then you end up chasing your tail as you try to get that integrated. And it also gets a lot more complicated as you cross jurisdictions on this. And that's where something that makes a lot of sense to me about Ren, right, is being able to do some of that coordination that you really have to be on point in virtually 130 jurisdictions across the globe.
That's right. Yeah. So we take that expertise and deploy it across the world. We take our learnings in, let's say, Malaysia and bring that to a solution in the U.S. because we have that experience, that global experience. We've learned this elsewhere and we can introduce it into the solution. But to your point that you just made about, you know, jumping in, it's more than just missing the boat on the value. It's also the reputational risk of not getting involved. You know, as a consumer in the U.S., especially, we will all expect to have a bank that is involved with real-time payments soon. You know, for a lot of the U.S. population, they have no idea what real-time payments are. They might know PayPal or they might know the Cash App or Venmo, but true real-time payments through TCH or FedNow is going to be something that's a bit foreign to the U.S. population. And banks will become expected to jump in, and the reputational risk of not doing that, whether it's real-time payments or wallets, not trying that new trend that is facing our industry, where's that going to leave you in terms of your consumer's mindset towards you, but also the competition down the street?
Matt, you spoke a bit about Ren Payments Platform. Can you elaborate on how it specifically aids banks in integrating these alternative payment solutions?
Yeah, so I think we all know this, but change is hard. It's difficult. Innovation is not guaranteed. It's something we all strive for, but we all run into hurdles and things that we need to overcome on that innovation journey. And Ren was really born out of our own need to do that. We knew we needed to advance our products within Euronet, and we created Ren as a solution for that internal need and saw the tremendous value that it was creating for us, and then introduced it to the outside world. So what we were tackling was really the need to become more flexible as well as agile. You know, we were just talking about regulatory needs and the different payment methods that come up seemingly every month within our industry. And we needed a solution that could tackle both of those seamlessly across our business operations in 190 plus countries. So what we've done is created Ren to not only address our internal needs, but the needs of our clients in the form of a microservices-based architecture. You know, this greatly simplifies the implementation process between us and our clients, but it also allows our clients to move at their own pace on that innovation journey. And it's something that we've coined the incremental innovation path. The way that our product is built, it gives you the control to determine how fast you move on your innovation journey, but also to pick and choose what pieces of the solution that you would like to use. So let's say today you have interest in getting involved in FedNow in the US, but tomorrow you might have interest in introducing a new digital wallet to your customer base. We can help you do that. And you control how fast you want to do that. So Ren was built to not only control that innovation journey, but also to give you control over how it impacts your day-to-day operations. So what we often run into is the need to pull down a system at 2 a.m. on a Sunday and introduce new capabilities into that. With Ren, you don't have to do that. That microservices-based architecture is not only a way to deploy things in a, let's call it a product roadmap, but also it controls the deployment method within your own solution. So if we want to introduce a new capability to your solution now, we can do that. And it's not going to impact your day-to-day operations. It's going to logically deploy itself in a non-disruptive way and make sure your day-to-day operations are not impacted whatsoever. And the goal there is really eliminate disruptions, both in your product roadmap, but also those day-to-day operations to keep you live and trying new things. Our solution allows you to try something. If it doesn't work, we can pull it down very quickly, make some changes, and redeploy it back into your operations. And really, the purpose here is to simplify your innovation path as much as possible, while also giving you the total freedom to control the pace, the mix of products that you might purchase from your own net, but also the mix of products that you launch into your customer base as well.
How'd you come up with the name Ren Payments Platform?
That's a great question, Brian. So we viewed Ren as a renaissance, not only to our company, but to the industry. You know, a renaissance is a major change. It's a focal point in a point in time. And we viewed Ren as that for not only our company, but also for the industry. So it's not an acronym. Ren is simply a shortened renaissance.
Sounds good. Makes sense.
Matt and Brian, thank you so much again for sharing such great insights and really focusing on this rise of alternative payments and how it's shaping the next normal in banking.